This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area Wednesday, April 10th, 2013. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports investigators from the Colorado Bureau of Investigation are expected to arrive today at Thunder Mountain Lodge on Grand Mesa, where a fire early yesterday destroyed the main building. According to Delta County Undersheriff Mark Taylor, outbuildings associated with the lodge, formerly known as Spruce Lodge, were unaffected by the blaze. Taylor said emergency dispatch received a call about the fire at 12:30 a.m. early Tuesday, but by the time sheriff's deputies and firefighters from Cedar Edge arrived, quote, the lodge was basically gone. The Denver Post reports rangers have recovered a body believed to be that of a missing hiker in the Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park. According to a media release from the National Park Service, search efforts to locate the overdue hiker started on Sunday. The hiker had obtained a backcountry permit indicating he'd leave the park Saturday. On Sunday morning, park rangers found the hiker's car at a trailhead and a search of his intended route began. Searchers found the body 1,000 feet below the canyon's rim, south rim, on Tuesday. Investigators believe the backpacker, who has not been identified, fell to his death. Democrats at the State House are working on a slate of bills aimed at revamping the oil and gas industry as the legislature moves into its final few weeks. A bill that would change the mission of the state's Oil and Gas Commission cleared the full House on Tuesday, despite strong Republican opposition. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
Under House Bill 1269, state energy regulators would no longer have to foster energy development or maximize production by reducing waste. Democratic Representative Mike Foote from Lafayette is the bill's main sponsor.
All that it does is it says that a consideration of waste shall not trump a consideration for public health and safety. Industry will tell you that if there's any kind of resource left in the ground, that's waste. And that's an argument that hasn't held in any appellate court. It hasn't held anywhere.
Foote's bill is one of several Democratic measures moving through the legislature that would crack down on the oil and gas industry in favor of protections for the environment and public health. Democratic Representative Claire Levy of Boulder says changing the commission's mission will help address public concerns about hydraulic fracturing.
The context for this bill is tremendous public unease, concern over what they are seeing in their backyard. The public must have confidence that the rules and regulations that govern this industry are good.
In its original form, the bill would have banned employees in the oil and gas industry from serving on the commission, but it was amended to instead require them to disclose financial conflict of interest information.
Is that how we govern? Based on somebody's hysteria level? Based on what somebody believes is a problem that doesn't exist?
That's Republican Representative Ray Scott of Grand Junction. He says people along the Front Range are overreacting to the boom in oil and gas development and that the current regulations work just fine. Republican Representative Tim Doerr of Elizabeth says he's most concerned about changing the definition of waste, which could leave more oil and gas in the ground.
You know, mineral rights are considered property rights in Colorado. And when we start eating away at that, we really go down a trail that can take us to a place we've never been before as a state. Property rights are so important. They're so important, not just to Colorado, but the fabric of this nation.
House Minority Leader Mark Waller of Colorado Springs says the current rules don't pit public health and safety against property rights, like some Democrats claim. Waller also doesn't believe industry members on the commission are only in it for financial gain.
It's not like they fly in on a helicopter every day and then fly back out. These are Colorado citizens. They have a vested interest in public health and safety issues in the state of Colorado.
But Democratic Representative Javon Melton of Aurora says he thinks the current system is too pro-industry, and he does want to put public health above property rights.
I came here to represent people, not property. It's important that we make sure that when we're extracting out these minerals and the oil, that we're actually doing things that make sure that we ensure the safety of our people first.
Two Democrats joined with Republicans to vote against the bill, but it still cleared the House. Governor John Hickenlooper said at a recent forum that he has reservations about the measure and would have to think carefully before changing the mission of the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. The bill now heads to the Senate. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
The Denver Post reports that a legislative committee wants to bolster Colorado's renewable energy standard by requiring an increase in renewables for rural electric cooperatives. The committee approved the bill late Monday after nearly 7 hours of debate. The legislation, which would require that 25% of electricity come from renewable sources, is aimed at Tri-State Generation and Transmission Association, which provides energy to our area through the Delta Montrose Electrical Association, or DMEA. Tri-State, Colorado's second largest utility, provides wholesale electricity to 18 rural cooperatives serving more than a million customers. The company currently has a 10% renewable power requirement. John Nielsen is the Energy Program Director at Western Resource Advocates, an environmental policy center. He said even though Tri-State provides about 20% of the state's electricity, it hasn't had to meet the same standards as other big utilities. Colorado's two investor-owned utilities, Xcel Energy and Black Hills Energy, must generate 30% of their electricity from renewable resources by 2020. The bill, sponsored by Senate President John Morse, a Democrat from Colorado Springs, and House Speaker Mark Ferrandino, a Democrat from Denver, passed on a 3-2 party line vote in the Senate's State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee. Tri-State and rural electric cooperative officials told the committee that the 25% target by 2020 was asking for too much too fast. Rick Gordon, chairman of Tri-State's board, testified that it would cost Tri-State between $2 billion and $4 billion in the next 6 years to meet the standard. Gordon estimated that at $3 billion, it could boost rates 20%. Ron Bintz, the former chairman of the State Public Utilities Commission and an industry analyst, disputed Tri-State's cost estimates. He said that Xcel has paid much less for its wind power. Bintz said Tri-State's figures were incredible, as in not believable, to quote him. The bill limits rate increases on consumers' bills for renewable energy to 2%, the same cap that exists for big utilities like Xcel. The bill also includes a provision to count fugitive methane emissions from coal mines as a renewable energy resource. The bill, SB 252, is strongly supported by environmental groups and the renewable energy industry, which said it would boost investment and jobs in the state. It seems like everyone has an opinion on the Bureau of Land Management decision to stop the clock on a set of energy leases in the Thompson Divide. On Tuesday, the BLM suspended more than two dozen leases. Most of them were set to expire at the end of May. Aspen Public Radio's Marcy Krivenin reports.
The main opposition group to drilling in the area fought to let the leases expire. The Thompson Divide Coalition submitted more than 2,000 comments. Zane Kessler is the coalition's director.
They refused to provide a formal public comment period on the suspensions. They kept it as a bureaucratic agency-level decision, and we went ahead and submitted as many comments as possible.
David Boyd is a spokesman for the BLM. He says the suspension comes after companies SG Interests and Ursa Resources showed interest in developing natural gas in the area.
When a company has submitted development proposals, or in this case, they also submitted unitization proposals, which is a request to group leases together to kind of organize the development, then that's something we have to look at.
The suspension breathes new life into the leases, which have a 10-year deadline. If you don't develop in that window, your leases could expire. The suspension lengthens the life of the leases. The news sparked outrage from one environmental group. The Wilderness Workshop said the BLM bailed out the oil and gas industry and disregarded the will of the public. Zane Kessler of the Thompson Divide Coalition has mixed feelings on the BLM's decision.
We think BLM missed a key opportunity here to do the right thing, and we're disappointed that they didn't consider the thousands of comments submitted by local municipalities, counties, and concerned citizens. But we also understand that the opportunity for a market-based solution still exists.
He says the coalition's main focus now will be to get the oil and gas companies on board with their buyout proposal. The group has offered the companies money for the leases, but so far no deal has been struck. Still, Don Simpson with one of the companies, Ursa Resources, says an agreement could be reached.
The buyout offer that was offered in the past is way, way low for the value. But, that doesn't mean we can't come to some kind of an agreement at some point.
He says the suspension gives his company time to work out a deal with the coalition. In a statement, SG Interests also said the one-year suspension allows time for the company to continue negotiations with the coalition concerning the buyout proposal. Still, SG Interests says its strong preference is to develop the leases. During the suspension, the BLM and the Forest Service will work with those companies on environmental reviews of the leases themselves and the development proposals. David Boyd with the BLM says there will be plenty of time for public input, and there's a chance the Bureau could void the leases in the end.
As we do the environmental review of the leases, the end result could be that the leases could be voided, they might be reaffirmed, or they could be modified. And so until we have that answer, we really won't know what then will occur on these leases.
The suspensions expire in April of next year. That's when the companies will find out whether or not they can develop in the Thompson Divide.
That was Marcy Krivenin for Rocky Mountain Community Radio. I suspect we haven't heard the last of that story. In another story with continuing developments, the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that groundwater monitoring wells have found contamination as far as 800 feet from the presumed center of a hydrocarbons leak near Parachute Creek, and also across the creek from the leak site, as the area of known contamination keeps growing. New sampling results from two monitoring wells on the south side of Parachute Creek continue to show impacts to groundwater. Two of those monitoring wells showed benzene levels of 3,300 and 2,600 parts per billion. Another monitoring well, this one about 200 feet east of the creek, also showed benzene at 1,200 parts per billion. In addition, in the first sign of potential contamination of creek water related to the leak, what are called diesel range organics, or DROs, were detected in an absorbent boom that had been in place in the creek itself. But Department of Natural Resources spokesman Todd Hartman admitted a creek water sample as early as March 9th in the investigation area also showed the presence of DROs. Kirby Wynn, oil and gas liaison for Garfield County, said the new developments are of great concern to the county. This information was made public 1 month after Williams first reported contaminated soil just east of the creek on March 8th in a pipeline corridor that goes beneath the waterway. Three pipelines in the corridor serve Williams' adjacent gas processing plant. Some 6,000 gallons of hydrocarbons and 175,000 gallons of contaminated groundwater have been removed from the site, and the source of the leak still hasn't been determined. The investigation has centered on an above-ground valve set for a 4-inch natural gas liquids line that leaves the plant and around a nearby interceptor trench. High levels of benzene in groundwater previously had been reported as far as 325 feet from the primary investigation site and as close as 10 feet from the creek. But no groundwater contamination previously had been found on the other side of the creek from the leak. Hartman said a thin layer of liquid hydrocarbons was found in a monitoring well 800 feet east of the primary investigation area and in the first monitoring well installed on the creek's south side across the creek from the leak area. Authorities previously had said there has been no evidence of impacts to the creek from the leak. Hartman said he was referring to benzene contamination. Benzene is a carcinogen and byproduct of oil and gas development. He said the source of DRO is unknown. Matthew Allen of the Environmental Protection Agency said anything can transport DROs into a creek, such as someone walking into the creek with contamination on their boots. He said chemical compounds making up diesel can be found in nature, but DROs wouldn't be expected to show up naturally in a creek. He said if pollutants are found in the creek, the EPA has authority to take additional measures to address the situation. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, part of the Department of Natural Resources, has led the investigation, but the EPA and Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has also been involved. On Thursday, Williams revealed that a pressure gauge on the valve set was discovered to have been leaking way back on January 3rd. The company says the gauge probably leaked fewer than 25 gallons and wouldn't explain benzene having traveled hundreds of feet in groundwater by now. But Bob Arrington, a member of the Garfield County Energy Advisory Board and a retired mechanical engineer with pipeline experience, says he thinks such a gauge could leak 6,000 gallons in just 4.5 hours. Quoting Arrington, "I know if you lose a pressure gauge, it can gush out on you," end quote. He also said groundwater moves fast enough to explain the benzene's travel. Early reports from the site, about 4 miles up the creek from the town of Parachute, had put the size of the plume at 200 feet by 70 feet and 14 feet deep. Some unofficial reports have expanded the estimate to nearly twice that size, but the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent reports that state spokesman Hartman said Monday that any estimate at this point would be sheer guesswork. And finally, the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that a rally timed to coincide roughly with the deadline to file tax forms will take place Saturday afternoon at Lincoln Park in Grand Junction. The rally is an outgrowth of similar events in 2009 when the Tea Party movement coalesced around the United States and is organized locally by Freedom Colorado, formerly known as the West Slope Conservative Alliance. Speakers will address recent gun legislation in Colorado and pending legislation in Washington, D.C., as well as education. Among the speakers is Ken Ivory, a Utah state legislator and president of the American Land Council, a backer of legislation in Utah asking the federal government to turn over lands to the state. Ivory is to speak about public lands at 6:30 p.m. this Thursday, April 11th. At the Grand Junction Masonic Lodge, 2400 Consistory Court. That event, as with the Saturday rally, is open to the public. Thus concludes today's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria. Good day.